Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Yeah, we've been waiting for this game quite a long time. It's massive.
It is massive indeed. That was U.S. Men's National Team coach Jurgen Klinsmann, as we are just 18 minutes away from kickoff time in the U.S. match against Germany, the last match for the U.S. in the group of death, as you well know if you've been following the World Cup, the last stage for the U.S. before the knockout games of the World Cup, so massive that Coach Klinsmann has written and signed and tweeted a permission note to your boss to get you out of work to watch the game, or at least to take a two-hour lunch. We have retweeted it, if you want to see it, at Brian Lehrer or on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. In fact, we retweeted my own version of the note, which has my signature on it, adding my permission for you to take off the next few hours from work. So go get it at Brian Lehrer on Twitter. Joining us now is Fernando Rodriguez Villa, a Fusion Soccer God show. He needs no Klinsmann get out of work card as he joins us live from Rio to preview the match, and he's getting paid for it no less. Hi, Fernando. Hello from New York.
Hi, Brian. How's it going? Greetings from Rio de Janeiro.
And this game is actually not in Rio, correct?
No, it's in Recife, where there's flash floods all over the city. People are having a lot of trouble getting to the stadium. But it looks like the field is in okay condition, but it's going to be a wet one out there today.
Any U.S. fans or German fans getting worked up before noon? Can you see?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the streets are teeming. There's much more American fans here than Germans. America has been very well represented at this World Cup. I'm actually going to go watch it at the Fan Fest here in Rio de Janeiro on Copacabana Beach, where there's always hundreds of American fans supporting the team.
So listeners, call in with your pregame comments, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Have you seen the Klinsmann permiso? It's up on our website if you need to print it out, although it might be a little late for you. The copy is what it says: I understand that this absence may reduce the productivity of your workplace, but the hashtag USMNT, U.S. Men's National Team, has a critical World Cup game versus Germany, and we will need the full support of the nation if we are to advance to the next round, end quote. So we will give first priority on the phones to anyone using the Klinsmann permission slip or anyone else who has inexplicably come down with a 24-hour flu or some kind of spontaneous mystery stomach bug to get out of work today, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And if you're excited, you're really, really not alone. Here's comedian Will Ferrell at a soccer rally in Recife.
I'm going to try my best.
I don't know if he can make that out in front of all the cheering, but Will Ferrell will bite. He will bite all the Germans if he has to. And on a somewhat more serious note, Fernando, we saw, of course, the Uruguayan player Luis Suarez, otherwise known as the guy who bites other players during games. This just came down this morning. He's been banned by FIFA for 9 matches and 4 months for biting Italy's player in their match on Tuesday, and this was his third biting offense. My first take on this is, yeah, he's out of the rest of the World Cup, but why isn't it 3 bites and you're out for longer than 4 months?
I mean, I was actually quite shocked at how long the ban was.
Really?
I mean, 4 months? Yeah, I've never seen such a long ban in international soccer. I mean, there's very, very few cases of this. I mean, I guess it just speaks to how bizarre the incident is, right? Because there's been violent behavior in the past. We've seen behavior that could actually injure a player or end someone's career. This one didn't really have a threat to injury, but it was just so strange and bizarre. And then the other thing, that the reason why it's not 3 strikes and you're out, is that this was done in an international match, whereas the other biting incidents were done in his domestic league. But it's a 4-month ban from any playing of soccer anywhere is pretty astonishing, I thought.
Steve in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
life. I'm taking the day off today because I'm taking my rabbit to the vet.
Oh, poor bunny.
Her name's Muffin. I've got her with me right now.
Yeah, your appointment is after 1:45, I presume. Yeah, Steve, thank you very much. 212-433-WNYC. And Tedla in Flushing, you're on the air. Hi, Tedla.
Yes, good afternoon, Brian. I want the United States team to play an offensive game tonight, today. Because if we are going to the field believing that tying Germany will go us to the next round, that will be devastating because Germany's team are going to play like any other game. They are going to make sure that they will win this game. We have to get to the field in the same motive. We don't care what Ghana and Portugal is doing over there. That's not our business. Avoid silly mistake like we did last time, defensive mistake. Take it as a game. Win it, and we go to the next round.
Tedla, thank you very much. And for those of you who are not obsessed with this already, I want to help explain to you what he was referring to there. And our guest, Fernando Rodriguez-Villa of Fusion Soccer God Show, I'm sure can help us do that. Because there's been a lot of discussion about both teams playing to tie in this game, which is sort of, you know, an unusual strategy because it's risky. But if they both tie, the U.S. and Germany both go on to the next round. If one of them beats the other, then there's the risk, I guess, that one would not go on, depending on what happens in the other simultaneous game that's also starting at noon, as Tedla referred to. So is tying the best? Well, is there any possibility that in real life, two competitive World Cup soccer teams will actually have some kind of unstated understanding to play for a tie?
Well, there is precedent for this. It happened actually with the German national team back in the World Cup in 1982, where they were playing, West Germany was playing Austria, and if Germany won 1-0, both teams would go through. So Germany scored right away, early in the game, and then for the rest of the game, both teams just passed the ball around, and they didn't really attack each other, and the crowd went crazy because they saw what was going on. And that's actually why FIFA changed the rule to have the teams play simultaneously. That's why the Germany and U.S. game is at the same time as the Ghana-Portugal game, you know, so that you don't know what you need to do in order to go ahead. But in this scenario, it's quite unique in that they know that a draw gets them both through. I think that FIFA will be watching very closely, and there's just too much to lose at this point. So if they get any whiff of any foul play, they've shown that they can be very swift in their decision-making with this Luis Suarez incident, you know, because usually FIFA takes months to launch an investigation, and they did this one in just a couple of days. So there's just way too much to lose at this point. And so I think both teams will go for the win. If it's toward the end of the game and it's 0-0, will they sort of bring on a bunch of forwards to try and go for the game? Probably not. But they definitely won't deliberately just kind of play for a draw by mutual agreement.
So remind us of what the possible outcomes of this game mean for the U.S. in the tournament. Obviously, if they win, they go on. We just established that if they tie, they go on. But even if they lose to Germany today, they might go on. What would have to happen?
They still have a good chance of going through if they lose by a small margin, right? So if they lose by one goal, they still have a decent chance of going through. That's because Germany hammered Portugal in their first game 4-0. So the U.S. has Germany has a very positive goal differential. It's a little complicated, but basically what the U.S. needs to do is lose by less goals than Ghana beats Portugal by, and then they should be okay because they have a one goal over Ghana. So the U.S. is in a good spot. They have a very, very good chance of going through, regardless of their result. A draw assures them of going through. A win assures them of going through winners of the group, which is a very positive thing and would be a shocking result that no one predicted. But they could even go through with a sort of one-goal loss.
9 minutes to the start of the match. Hey, Americans, how does it feel to be the plucky underdog? This is not the role that the United States is usually in the world, right? 212-433-WNYC. Mets fans, maybe you're used to it, but not most Americans. 212-433-9692. So let me play two clips here. The first is of Coach Klinsmann, I think, pushing back on the assumption in my last statement.
I think some people might be a little bit surprised about our results so far. We are not. We are now by no means any underdog here.
We are by no means any underdog here. But some of you may have heard Elizabeth Gilbert, the author, who is in our studio this week and is a huge World Cup fan.
I think part of the joy of watching this World Cup is that this is, I think, quite literally the only instance in the world in which the United States is a scrappy little underdog. And there's something really fun about being able to, you know, unabashedly cheer on the United States without sounding sort of fascistic.
Fascistic against Germany. So do you want to weigh in, Fernando? Is the U.S. an underdog? And did Coach Klinsmann have a strategic reason for spinning us there as not the underdog?
Well, I do. U.S. is definitely the underdog in this match. Germany are one of the best teams in the world. They're an incredibly potent squad. They're always tough in World Cups. I mean, they've made the semifinals more than any other country in the history of the World Cup. So they're, the U.S. is definitely an underdog. But there is, I think, I like Klinsmann's comments. And Klinsmann is known more as a master motivator than a sort of tactical innovator, if that makes sense. You know, he's very good at getting a squad to believe in themselves, to sort of rally behind the cause. He's not so much an X's and O's guy, if that makes sense. You know, for that's how he got Germany to the semifinals in the 2006 World Cup. And I've seen how the U.S. has played in this World Cup, given how much they struggled in the games just before it. I'm very, very impressed at how positive they look.
In fact, the way he made news before the series began, before the tournament began, was by saying the U.S. is not going to win the World Cup this year. The U.S. team is not ready. He said that about his own team. And that made people go, oh, probably he's saying this about his own team. And maybe that was a motivational tool. And now at this point, after they've overachieved a little bit, he's turning around and saying we are by no means any underdog here. So maybe it's all part of his master plan.
Yeah, maybe it's just the mind games he's playing with these players. You know, who knows what his master plan is, but it seems to be working very well right now.
Robert in Queens, you're on WNYC with 6 minutes to go before the match. Hi, Robert.
Okay. First of all, some advantages of being self-employed today. And
you gave yourself the Klinsmann permission slip?
I did. I put it in last week, and it was approved.
Of course, when you're self-employed, you'll have to make it up on the weekend.
without a doubt, without a doubt. We come from a bit of a conflicted household. My son, who is half French, is not all the way with USA. But I wanted to make a point about the Suarez to the guest who follows all these guys and all these personalities. I caught the Uruguay game where Suarez might have been, I think it was last week, where Suarez scored the winning goal. And I got to tell you, the way he reacted on the field in victory, I said two things. And I don't know, the first thing I said was, this guy's unhinged. And the second thing I said was, he's got big teeth. And I don't know, does he have a reputation of just, he just looked unhinged to me after that goal last week.
The better to smile at you with, my dear. What is the Suarez story? Nando.
So Suarez is an absolutely brilliant soccer player. I mean, he's one of the three or four best players in the world. He's an amazing goal scorer. I thought his game against England, the first game that he played in this World Cup, was a master performance from him. It was probably the high point of his career, especially playing against the country where he plays in his domestic league. So it was an amazing performance. He single-handedly destroyed their defense. And beat them with Uruguay is a much, much smaller country with a much more limited resources. And it was probably the high point of his career. And he's a very, very emotional guy. After the game, he was bawling. He was crying. You know, he knew the sort of the gravity of the moment. And then the very next game, he probably has the low point of his career, which is biting someone at a World Cup with billions of people watching. He's just the way he is. He's kind of insane. He's had all kinds of problems throughout his career. You know, it's controversy. He's followed him everywhere he's gone. But he's an absolutely brilliant player. He's one of the most talented players in the world and an absolutely incredible goal scorer. So it's just kind of, do you take the bad with the good? You know, some people say yes, some people say no. But there is no denying his talent. He's just probably a little crazy, or more than a little crazy.
Now, the U.S. team has had one fewer days of rest than the Germans. And that last game in the Amazon was so punishing, even emotionally with that last-minute Portuguese goal, of course, but certainly physically. It feels like we're still recovering at fans from that sick-to-the-stomach feeling that the announcer so instantly conjured up. Is it true that every team to come out of that Manaus Stadium, where the U.S. played Portugal on Sunday, has lost their next match?
Yeah, not only have they lost their next match, but every team that has played in Manaus has been eliminated so far. So it's it's a bad omen for the U.S. I mean, you saw the physical toll. It took Italy and England play their first game in Manaus, and the Italian team was just knackered after that game. They didn't look right in their following games. Physically, they were spent. The U.S. is a very fit team. But you saw toward the end of the game, and even in stretches of the first half even, where the players couldn't move, and they had to stop the game for a little bit for the first time in World Cup history because it was so hot. They had to stop for a water break, which I've never seen happen before. So it was physically a very, very punishing game. You saw Klinsmann made some changes to the lineup today. I suspect it was because he probably saw some of his players were just physically spent after that sort of marathon game, that sort of epic performance, and the emotional, like you said, the emotional toll it probably took.
Well, now they have to play the game. So we thank Fernando Rodriguez Villa of Fusion Soccer God Show as the clock ticks down to noon and the U.S.-Germany match. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Put your flags up in the sky.